Charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see why not let's leave?
man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, yo, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven rain. Ring with the harmony, oh, let it be. Let our rejoicing rise high. Loud as the Georgia. God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who has brought us this far.
Jimmy's Underground Radio. We gonna take the show somewhat different. We gonna put my man on blast today. We gonna put Jesse Jackson Jr. on blast. Now I'm waiting for my producer to come in. She's a little bit late. She had a car trouble. And so I got one more commercial break, 347-838-9825. Tune in, call in. Thanks for checking us out and being part of our mighty 700,000 listeners.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
Jimmy Lee Underground Radio Network, 347-838-9825. We're going to kick it off like this. The name of this theme song is, the theme show is Jesse Jackson Jr. on blast. But I got a little theme song that I want to play that I got just for my man. And I hope it comes out clear because I got everything hooked up to this kind of funny here. But this is my first choice. It's called Smarty Pants. So go out to you, Jesse Jackson Jr., while you recover. Here we go, my man.
By the way, my name.
Yeah, that's my man, Jesse Jackson Jr., Mr. Smarty Pants himself. Thought he had it all set up. Thought he had it all lined up. I got a good call in all early. What's going on, Dana from D.C.? What's happening? How you doing? Gotcha. Yeah, you in now. What's going on?
Hey, how are you?
All right. What's your crib? You rolling around? Where you at?
No, we just came back from looking at some college stuff. They had like a little college fair.
Yeah.
Had like a little college fair, so now we're on our way back.
Well, listen, I'm doing this little thing on Jesse Jackson Jr. I'm about to put him on blast right now. And I know you ain't at your computer, so I'm going to give you time to get your computer. So what I'm going to do now is play this little cut I got. This is of Jesse Jackson Jr., everybody. This is him on an interview with Don and Roma. Don Wade and Roma. This happened in September 17th. Not this past, like this, right before Rahm Emanuel got elected. Now, this is Jesse Jackson daring the federal government to bring it on if they have anything on them. I'm going to just play and let y'all figure what's going on, then we're going to talk about it. Like I said, this is Jesse Jackson being on blast there, everybody. It's Don Wade and Roma. You can put us off of WLS, off their little hype page. Let me just talk to you.
Optimistic radio experience in the interim. A frequent guest. He used to talk all the time. He's back. Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr., good morning.
Good morning.
Hi,
John.
Hi, Roma.
Welcome back.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Ray.
Nice to have you here.
So you had a meeting because the mayor has decided he's not going to run, so everybody's having meetings now. And you decided to have a meeting with Rahm Emanuel, and it's in the papers, and everybody wants to know what happened.
It was a long meeting.
90 minutes, you guys did a lot of chit-chat.
Right.
What was the headline coming out of that meeting?
Well, Rahm and I agreed that the city's financial crisis puts Chicago at a tipping point, that the ramifications of this tipping point could obviously tear at the social, the political, and the economic fiber that holds the city together and that makes it great. Both of us are obviously very concerned about the election on November the 2nd and the subsequent municipal elections, and both of us agreed that all of the campaigns for those who would be contenders for the mayoralty should conduct their efforts on a very high moral ground, because if this effort and their efforts don't reflect that moral high ground, it could make the city ungovernable.
Well, what does that mean, high moral ground? Is this an agreement between you and Rahm that neither one of you will bring up the Blagojevich trial?
No, absolutely not. If the Blagojevich trial comes up, I mean, obviously it has to be dealt with, because voters deserve to know, and they need to know.
But then, what do you mean by high moral ground?
Well, campaigns tend to sometimes head into an abyss that makes the city council ungovernable. We witnessed that in 1983 during the Harold Washington years. And Chicago is confronting some real problems. And so the voters deserve a thoughtful conversation, Don, about the economic future of the city.
How would you balance the budget? How would you, Jesse Jackson Jr., balance the budget?
Exactly. And there are going to be some real choices that have to be made, and all of the voters in the city need to hear it. Are we going to be able to raise taxes? Is there a mood in the city of Chicago to raise taxes? The voters themselves need to hear from those points of view. There's another point of view, that we can potentially grow our way out of the crisis. I have argued historically, and sitting right now, Roma, on Governor Quinn's desk is a guaranteed program backed by private sector dollars and guaranteed by the government of Canada, $1.5 billion. Sitting on Governor Quinn's desk that just requires his signature, that, for example, would open a south gateway to the city so that more people can come into the city and bring cargo and bring conventions to help balance and grow our way.
You're talking about a third airport.
That's exactly what I'm
talking
about.
Okay, let's clear the ground here. Do you own any property down there that would benefit personally, any of you or your family or any of your friends?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I have no personal interest in it whatsoever. In fact, and let me be perfectly clear, in fact, since the Wright brothers and since the Kitty Hawk, airports have always been built as municipal functions. That is, Chicago owns and runs O'Hare and Midway. Chicago owns Midway Airport. Cook County government does not own or run Midway Airport. In the state of Illinois, municipalities run airports. They own and they run them. That's the state statute. Jesse Jackson Jr. does not own a third airport. He has no personal interest in a third airport. Congress and its laws will not let me benefit from my work as a member of Congress.
All right, Congressman, you and Rahm sat down for a 90-minute meeting, and essentially one of you decided to drop out and the other is going to run. Is that what happened?
Well, that did not happen
either. Well,
he's a pretty cutthroat guy. I mean, Everybody knows Rahm. He is a fierce political competitor.
Well, let me be clear. Rahm, as I shared with a reporter yesterday, is not a bantamweight. He is a heavyweight fighter, and he is believes in a heavyweight fight potentially for Chicago's future. And we also have to recognize that quite possibly in his corner, his cut man may be the president of the United States.
Be an asset right now?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you enter this ring, and there are a lot of candidates whose name are entering the ring, and they're entering it probably one or two a day now, they need to enter the ring sober. They ought not be using performance-enhancing drugs. They need to come into the fight in top shape, and that means they need to be bringing an A game, because that's exactly what the former chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, who's run dozens of campaigns simultaneously, senatorial campaigns, presidential campaigns, and has even run Mayor Daley's campaign, would obviously bring to this contest. And so anyone just lobbing things, they can expect a campaign that has the potential to tear at the fiber of the city. I think Rahm and I both agree that kind of campaign will not be beneficial to Chicago's future.
All right, let me see if I can clear all of the ground here, because there are certain one or two questions that we have to clear up, and then everything's fine. As we played the report that was on ABC 7 last night with Stacey Baca, she pointed out this confluence, the overlapping, the trial. The Rob Blagojevich trial is going to be January 3rd through the 11th. This is in the height of the mayoral campaign. The election is on Feb 22. And Laura Washington said...
What I'm hearing in the African-American community is that there are a lot of people who would really be behind him, except for this federal investigation. They're afraid there's going to be another shoe that's going to drop.
They're talking about the African-American community being behind Jesse Jackson Jr. Now, I referred to the Tribune of July, and they said a supporter of Representative Jackson told the congressman in 2008 that he would raise $1 million in return for then Rob Blagojevich naming Jackson to the U.S. Senate. This is the prosecutor's position. This is the first time authorities publicly suggested that Jackson was aware of the efforts by his allies to swap campaign cash for his appointment to the Senate seat. So the question is, were you sitting down with some important Indian businessman in a Loop restaurant on October 28th with a discussion over money for you to get that Senate seat?
Well, let me be clear about this. Number one, my name has obviously come up in the case, and so has Rahm Emanuel's. I'm not on any tapes, but he is. But neither one of us has been accused of any wrongdoing. In addition to that, I'm not alone in the meeting. You know, it baffled me that, you know, Jackson sits with the Indians. How about this? Congressman meets with Director of Economic Development and Trade for the state of Illinois, who one of the gentlemen happened to be, met with him for 30 minutes in the presence of other people and discussed the third airport, when another gentleman showed up and began having a conversation practically in Hindu, because I don't speak Hindu or Swarmi, and I did not participate in any of that part of the conversation, nor do I even remember hearing it, and I have witnesses present. So I know that's probably not enough for some people, but I've kind of endured this for about 20 months, just kind of watching it banter about. But show me the evidence that says I instructed anybody to do anything. And let me say it again, because I'm saying it to you on your show. And I have witnesses. So whatever happened to the idea that someone is innocent in America until proven guilty? I have gone through 20 months of unprecedented accusations, unprecedented besmirching of my character. And I can live with the consequences of that. I mean, I love Chicago, but I can assure you this. Let me say this on your show, Don and Roma, because you guys have always been kind to me. I'm going to do nothing in the municipal elections, should I choose to engage them or not, that tear at the fiber of the city. If my presence in the campaign or even my presence in this present process of trying to provide some leadership on these questions is so detrimental, if my service for 15 years has been so bad to the city of Chicago, that it's not worth me engaging in an effort that talks about the city's future. That's where I am.
I think probably your quietude over the past month has contributed to that.
Well,
your decision not to get out into the fray and to let it just all play out.
But you know, Roman, it's a legal process, and I have to respect that legal process. This is Mr. Fitzgerald's process. It's not my process. And so with all due respect, when I received a subpoena, as Rahm Emanuel did and Valerie Jarrett did, you know, what we say can and will be held against us in a court of law. And so the prosecution didn't call me. The defense didn't call me.
Right.
Because the prosecution, I assume, has concluded that what I have to say doesn't contribute to their case. And I assume that they have no evidence or they should have brought a charge. If I'm a conspirator, bring it on. But I can't possibly be a conspiracy to that which I'm not a part of or have no knowledge of.
Right. So
you are at ease about the Blago trial coinciding with the campaign for the mayor?
No, I'm not at ease with it. I mean, who could possibly be at ease with issues that could divert the attention of a very serious debate about the city's economic future, which the city has got to go through? Because there will be real challenges for the next mayor, and then have a diversion from the very serious issues that take it from being about Chicago to being about an individual.
Right.
No, I'm not happy with that at all, and I'm going to give it a very serious thought as I wrestle with my decision.
You met not only with Rahm, but you also met with Luis Gutierrez and Danny Davis. Are they all considering it still?
I've also met with Reverend Senator James Meeks, and for 22 years, I've been waking up Roma next to another potential mayoral candidate. And
She's a beautiful one.
We spoke to her.
Yes,
we spoke to her, and I'm curious, how will that work out to get Jesse Jackson Jr., your wife and your brother, well, three Jacksons, all on the ballot?
Different bedrooms.
Well, first of all, that's not going to happen. Let me be clear on that. And let me lay out what I think is real here for all Chicagoans, because this is a very serious issue. When Harold Washington ran in 1983, he said, I need $250,000 initial dollars. I need a registration drive with 50,000 new voters. I need the latitude, because Chicago isn't just black, to campaign in the white community and other parts of Chicago, Polish, Irish, gay and lesbian, to reach out to voters. And inherent in these ideas that Harold put forward is that he needed to be the sole candidate so that he could operate a campaign and the base could unite behind him. In today's terms, that means probably, given that the A game is likely to come to Chicago, it probably means a campaign of about $5 million over the next several months. It probably means a registration drive that could be upwards of 100,000 voters, given voter apathy. It means the candidate can't just be speaking to their base. They have to be able to speak to all Chicagoans, because no one is likely to get 50 plus 1% of the vote. And if they don't get 50 plus 1% of the vote, there's going to be a runoff. So this is really a race for first or second place, and those two candidates, one of them will emerge as the next mayor. And lastly, the more African Americans who announce every day that they're running, it increases the likelihood that they will all be single-digit finishers. And once they're single-digit finishers, they will neither be first or second.
So how did Harold get everybody else in the African American community to sit down, be quiet, let me I'll lead the way.
Well, I can tell you this, Don. If Harold had said to everybody in the black community, sit down, be quiet, he wouldn't be the mayor.
But he managed that. Because it didn't get splintered.
And James Meeks is a formidable.
Roma, after 21 years of Mayor Daley, there's a lot of pent-up ambition in all communities. I mean, that's just, you know, the reality and the facts. And in the African-American community, there's, you know, this pent-up ambition of lots of people. Mm-hmm. But there are some objective ways of measuring this. $5 million?
That's objective.
100,000 new voters? Capacity to speak to all elements of the city of Chicago, because we have real financial and real economic problems going forward, and there needs to be a narrowing of the field if you don't meet these criteria.
Rahm,
I think that's That's true. Rahm's coming that heavy.
He has 1.2 million.
I've seen Rahm Emanuel as a member of Congress raise 100 million. If Rahm Emanuel wanted to raise 100 million,
how much have you got?
Not enough.
Well, he tells us he's
been spending a whole lot of other things lately.
All right.
So is money going to be the sole decider in this?
No.
I mean, because he has the clout to raise all that money, it's a done deal?
Well, remember, no, that's not true, because the people of the city of Chicago will ultimately be able to decide, you know, their economic future, which I believe they will vote their economic interests in this campaign. So whoever has the money will be able to go on television and talk about their economic future. So people will hear that message.
Yes.
People who do not have the money, well, they may be at Kinko's trying to tell people their economic message, but they won't be on TV doing it. And that is a factor in the modern campaign. It is not something that was as prevalent in 1983 when Harold ran, but it certainly is a factor in the modern campaign.
Yeah. Well, you're a nicer guy than Rahm.
Well, yeah. I appreciate that, but whoever the next mayor is, whether it's me or whether it's Reverend Meeks, whether it's Rahm Emanuel, Tom Dart, or Terry Peterson, Sandy Jackson, or whomever else would want to be mayor, they need to be in a position to bring the city of Chicago together after the campaign, because we've got serious business in front of us.
I have a final question here. I know our time is short. 31 House Democrats have signed a letter to Nancy Pelosi and to Steny Hoyer, urging them to extend expiring tax breaks for all income levels, including the wealthy. Are you one of the 31?
I have not signed that letter, and while there will be some acts of desperation by some of my colleagues, extending tax breaks going into the election, I'm afraid, might be seen as an election year gimmick. And what needs to happen very carefully is some thought needs to be given to that, because there could be a blowback. Most of those 31 Democrats, given this Hail Mary pass at the last minute, given how people feel about the economy, and given that most people won't experience or feel those tax breaks between now and November 2nd, some of them ain't coming back to Congress. So I'm not interested in signing on to anything that's not thoughtful.
Do you believe that Nancy Pelosi will not compromise, will not encourage Democrats to vote for the
to extend, all,
to extend the, all?
I think the Speaker of the House's career potentially hangs in the balance, and so she will have to strike the balance that works for her perspective, from her perch, and from what she sees.
All right.
But between now and November 2nd, people have to make very independent judgments about their capacity to go back, speak to their constituents, and tell people what they fought for.
Jesse Jackson, Jr., Congressman, it's so nice to talk to you again. It's
great to have you.
Don, thanks for having me on your show.
All right.
Thanks, Roma.
All right. You, Jesse.
And we're a little bit late, but we don't get to do this very often.
347-838-9825, Jimmy's Underground Radio. I'll be back in a moment. All right, Dan, I'll be back with you 1 second.
And now, the mellow sounds of Jimmy Irvin.
I never meant to make you cry. You were the only one I've ever loved in my life. And though it's hard for me to show it, I've got to let you know it. 'Cause darling, I love you more each day. But the words got in my way.
I can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs. 1, 2, 3, hit man, bop, bop, bop it out of bebop, bop, bop, yeah, bass man, come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit man, sound good, yeah, saxophone on the floor. 1, 2, 3, hit it. Come on. want more. Jimmy want more. Jimmy want, Jimmy want, Jimmy want more. Listen, Jimmy want a rib. Jimmy want a steak. Jimmy want a piece of your chocolate cake. But more than all that, Jimmy wants a break. Oh, Jimmy got soul. Jimmy got soul. Jimmy got, Jimmy got, Jimmy got soul. Or later, the time comes around for a man to be a man, take back his sound. I gotta do something to shake things up. I like Johnny Mathis, but I can't do that stuff. Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got S-O-U-L soul. I can't do rock, I can't do roll. What I can do, baby, is show my soul. Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got, Jimmy got, Jimmy got soul.
Jimmy Lee's Underground Radio Network. Again, the title of the show is Jesse Jackson Jr. on Blast. Before I bring my girl Dana in, let me just tell you, let me play this robocall that he's doing right now to his constituents right now. Let me, this is the Jesse Jackson robocall that is going out everywhere to all his constituents. Just don't laugh. Don't laugh. It's, you know, the man is ill, everybody. So, you know, I don't say don't pay the man no attention. You know, I don't say don't pay the man no mind, but the man is ill right now, and I'm having a hard time loading it up. Oh, my fault, Jesse. I can't get you in. So let me see if I can just get it going right now. But while I'm waiting, let me, okay, here you go.
For the past few months, I've undergone medical treatment to address several serious health issues. Like many human beings, a series of events came together in my life at the same time, and they've been difficult to sort through. I am human. I'm doing my best, and I'm trying to sort through them all. I want to thank you for the many thoughts and prayers during this difficult time for me and my family, especially my colleagues and the people who mean the most to me, my constituents. I'm starting to heal. The good news is my health is improving, but my doctors tell me the road to recovery is a long one. For nearly 18 years, I've served the people of the 2nd District. I'm anxious to return to work on your behalf, but at this time, it's against medical advice. And while I will always give my all to my constituents, I ask you to continue as I work to get my health back. After my family, my constituents are the most important people in the world to me. I will always act in your best interests. Your patience, your prayers, and your support during this difficult time means more to me than you will ever know. With your help, your patience, and God's grace, we will continue to work together to strengthen our communities, provide a better future for our children, and leave the world better than we found it. Thank you, and God bless you all.
Now, like I said, let's not make fun of the ill. Let me bring my friend in from Dana, D.C. What's going on, Dana?
What's happening, Jimmy? How are you?
All right, fine. Since this is a what's going on, Wednesday, and we're doing Jesse Jackson on Blast. You got anything you want to add on to our little topic?
Well, I'm just shocked, Jimmy. Oh my God, I'm just shocked. And you know what? I guess some of these things just show that what's done in the dark eventually comes to light. You know what I mean?
Right. So what? Do you got anything to add on to it though?
No. No, not at this point. I'm really listening and I'm absorbing all this knowledge you're giving me.
Right. So let me go to one little quick commercial break because my producer just came right in and we can hit the show right now. We got about – I got you in there. I got you. I got a commercial break. I want a commercial break. Hold on, Dan. And all your other callers are holding on to 347-838-9825, Jimmy's Underground Radio. That long one, Ebony.
Wouldn't you just like to feel clean again? In Chicago and surrounding areas, Unique Towel Cleaning Service is the best cleaning service. We do basic cleaning and super cleaning, offices and apartment buildings. We will even clean your barber shop, your beauty shop, your spa or restaurant's towels and aprons. Call Unique Towel Cleaning Service at 773-484-5027. Ask us about our very special offer for our new clients. Call us at 773-484-5027 today and feel clean again.
Hello, this is Prentice L. Allison, founder and president of SPSI, Service Perfect Solutions Incorporated, a network of financial service professionals teaching people how to use life insurance and annuities to retain more of their income and pay the least tax on it. Our toll-free number is 877-902-9048. We are proud to have serviced more than 500 clients, national and international, from ages 0 to 99 for the past 30 years. My tip to you today is, if you are a business owner with at least one employee, including yourself, it would behoove you to get business life insurance. Why? Thank you for asking. 7 points I want to leave with you. Your premiums are tax deductible. Your policy bills cash tax deferred. Your cash reserve inside the policy is yours to use tax free. The policy will replace your income if death occurred prematurely. The company will pay the premiums if you become disabled. The policy will return all premiums to you when you retire. Last but not least, make sure your agent is well experienced in business life insurance. Stay tuned for more tips on how to use life insurance and annuities to help yourself today and protect your family and business tomorrow. This is Prentice L. Allison, president of SPSI. Toll-free number is 877-902-9048. I wish you well, and to God be the glory.
Does your insurance company work for you? Hi, this is Ken Robinson, president and CEO of Ken Robinson & Associates Limited. We are an insurance brokerage firm located at 5963 West Madison Street, Chicago, Illinois. Our phone number is 773-626-0883. We make the insurance experience easier by shopping for you, saving you time and money. Our agency features the best insurance products, giving you the most competitive prices. We insure needs for less, featuring life, health, annuities, homeowners, auto, SR22, bond cards, business owners policies, general contractors liability, and vacant buildings. Now, we also offer coverages most major insurance companies no longer offer. Please call for a free quote at 773-626-0883.
Attention business owners, radio show producers, and internet radio producers. It's time to crank it up for 2012 with quality radio production. Are you a record label needing hot album promos or EPKs for your new artists? Introducing CoolVoiceRadio.com. Does your internet show need a new intro or outro? How about a promo for your upcoming event? Are you a DJ needing a hot voice for your next hot mixtape? Imagine increased sales in your business from an internet radio spot. We've got you covered with broadcast quality radio spot production with the nation's top voiceover talent, featuring talent like John Heath, Kate Clifford, Bill Thomas, and much, much more. Visit us online at www.coolvoiceradio.com. Coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800. Remember, nothing beats the right sound.
347-838-9825, Jiminy's Underground Radio Network. Like I said, we just putting JJJ on blast. We ain't trying to make fun of his illness. You know, I feel about the cat already, you know. I'm going to do a show on that in a second, but if you heard it early, you heard how he was already sucking up to Rom. Oh, nobody can beat Rom. Rom's the guy. Rom's the man. I'm not running. Meek's running. I mean, and that's why the city's all messed up. I mean, He has such high aspirations. But anyway, let me bring my callers in, 347-838-9825, and see if they ain't got anything to contribute on the conversation. Well, Dana, I got you live back in, Dana. What's going on? I guess other callers dropped. What's happening?
Oh, nothing much. I'm just sitting here reading this article that's in the Chicago Mag. And you know what? Honestly, it's like I feel sorry for him, but then it's hard because, gosh, you know, when I was growing up, I was told if you put yourself in a bad situation and bad things happen, you can't blame nobody but yourself.
Well, listen, Dana. You get the Chicago Magazine, I'm trying to pull it up. Why don't you go in and share with our audience why I try to screen these callers, because Emmy stepped out the room for a second. Why don't you go and read to our audience?
You want me to read the article?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead, share with us.
Okay, so this is an article that was written by Steve Rhodes, and the title of it is Jesse Jackson Jr.'s Dark Days. So it says, one of the most promising politicians in the nation, Jesse Jackson Jr., has seen his career go horribly wrong, marked most recently by his mysterious disappearance and the revelation that he's suffering from bipolar depression. What happened to Jr.? On a Friday afternoon in late July, one mystery about Jesse Lewis Jackson Jr. that had until then stumped the political grapevine was finally solved. His whereabouts. With the consent of his family, which had miraculously managed to keep the secret for almost 2 months, the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, issued a statement acknowledging that Jackson had checked in for extensive inpatient evaluation for depression and gastrointestinal issues. The Mayo statement, brief as it was at least represented progress. The disclosure of the 47-year-old congressman's location followed a string of odd statements and untruthful denials from the Jackson camp that shrouded his condition in secrecy. He had been MIA for 2 weeks before his office announced on June 25th, right before the deadline for independent candidates to challenge Jackson on the November ballot, that the congressman had taken a leave of absence for exhaustion. A July 5th statement that he was being treated for physical and emotional ailments that were more serious than first disclosed, though his office refused to provide any details. Then on July 11th, word came that Jackson was receiving intensive medical treatment at an unnamed inpatient center, later revealed to be Sierra Tucson in Arizona for a mood disorder. On August 13th came a second Mayo statement. Jackson was suffering from bipolar 2 depression, also known as manic depression. That distressing piece of news helped tamp down the rumor mill, suicide attempts and alcohol or drug addiction being the most heavily trafficked gossip. And this being Chicago, many political observers speculated all over again that Jackson was still under close scrutiny from federal prosecutors for his alleged role in the Go-Go Gate. How do you say that?
Blagojevich.
No, it's Blagojevich Gate. Blagojevich. So Blagojevich, for Blagojevich, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, keep it moving.
This appearance was somehow legally strategic. Was it a coincidence, they wondered, that Jackson vanished just days before his longtime friend and former campaign?
That's Blagojevich.
Blagojevich?
Blagojevich. Okay, it's Blagojevich. All right, there you go. All right, for my listeners, there you go. All right.
I am not familiar with that term. So he said, was it a coincidence, they wondered, that Jackson vanished just days before his longtime friend and former campaign fundraiser, Raghuveer Nayak? Is that how you pronounce it? A key figure in the Senate seat for sales scandal was arrested.
That is Nayak. And that was the man's name that we had placed in the earlier tape, that when he was talking to Don Wade and Roma, when he said, bring it on, he said some Indian guys came and sat down talking Hindu or Swami. This is the guy he was referring to that was talking Swami. All right, finish that.
Okay, it says, a key figure in the Senate seat for sales scandal was arrested and indicted on fraud charges involving his outpatient surgery center. In 2010, NIAC, under a grant of immunity, told federal investigators that Jackson directed him to offer millions in campaign cash to Governor Rod Blagojevich in exchange for appointing Jackson to Barack Obama's old Senate seat. Jackson has denied making any pay-to-play offers. Now, that just seems like that's slander, so I don't know. he cannot speak. It seems that he should not be able to speak about who was willing to pay somebody else for something. But anyway, NIAC also told investigators that he paid for plane tickets to fly Giovanna, I do not know how to pronounce that, Huidobro, Huidobro? I'm not sure. A lounge hostess and former swimsuit model who was Jackson's mistress at the time from Washington.
His mistress.
To Chicago.
His mistress.
Whatever her name is.
His
Chicago on weekends. When Jackson returned to his district, Jackson's wife, the alderman, Sandy Jackson, typically flew to D.C. on weekends to be with a couple of two children, Jessica 12 and Jesse the third, 8, who attended school there. A Congressional Ethics Committee investigation, which began in 2009, was delayed by the Blagojevich trial, remains open. Jackson, who at press time was still at the Mayo Clinic, declined interview requests through his staff, nor did any of his immediate family or staff agree to comment. It is a genuinely sad turn of event for the scion of one of the nation's most prominent black leaders. Before the name Obama was known to Chicagoans, Jesse Jackson's oldest son was the great black hope of the Democratic Party. A future Speaker of the House, maybe even, it was whispered in some quarters, a president. Few could have predicted that this once rising star would come to such a pass. And it has left concerned Chicagoans wondering about both his health and his political future.
Oh, Dana, Emmy says pause there for a second.
Okay, pause.
Hold on. Well, no, Emmy, let me explain something to you, the whole situation, because, yes, there were people who looked at him as a rising star. Like when I played earlier, you know, people have said, you missed the show earlier. Earlier I played Don Wade and Roma, and they was given a history of Jesse Jackson, his background, his political rise and fall, and stuff like that. So that's why I need to interfere in that pause. We have a little post-production back here. Now, everybody, we got everybody in the studio reading the magazine. We try to follow you, Dana. Continue on, please.
Okay, are you trying to follow me? Do you understand what I'm saying? Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Now keep it moving. Everybody is caught up with you now, and we're hanging on to you every word. We're trying to get to the heart of this whole matter.
Okay, so it says Jesse Jackson Jr. was once in the vanguard of new post-civil rights generation of African-American politicians, well-schooled, technocratic, and comfortable working across racial lines. In that regard, he differed from his famous father, who rose to political power fighting the white establishment during the civil rights movement and well beyond, and shaped his politics mostly by race. The second of 5 children, Jackson started young. He gave a speech at age five, standing on a milk crate at the headquarters of his father's civil rights group, Operation Push. But while he followed his dad's lead, he didn't always follow his footsteps. Growing up, the younger Jackson was often upset by his father's behavior, sources said. 3 sources, one close to Jackson, told Chicago, and that's the Chicago Magazine, not the city, that he revealed to them what they described as a childhood traumatized by the absence of his father, who was often off rallying, protesting, running for president twice, and by his frequent infidelities. Junior was the most sensitive of the 3 boys and the closest to his mother, and he saw how hard it was on her, a former confidant said. That upbringing of not having dad around and having dad running around really impacted Jesse. And it's the source of his insecurity and the source of the way he acts, and the source of why he acts the way he acts. The elder Jackson wasn't even at his namesake's birth, but he was en route to Selma, Alabama, to march with Martin Luther King Jr. As a child, Jackson was diagnosed as hyperactive and sent with his brother Jonathan.
Excuse me. That's a lie, but Jesse never ever marched in Selma with Martin Luther King. But
Hold on. We can't say.
We don't know where it is.
It's either all in or all out.
Hold on. This is Jesse Jackson's own blast, though. He might not have been at the Selma March rally. And he might not have been, he might not have been at his son's birth. But he wasn't at the Selma March in Alabama with Martin Luther King. Now, if he's en route, now, that's something to say. He was en route. He said it was there. Which is a good turn saying he was on his way to get there. All right, hold on. Okay.
We got to be all in or all out.
All in or all out, right. We can't be
we
in
be
route.
All in or all out. We can't just count part of the story and then expect everybody to believe all of the story. You see what I'm saying?
I just have to let everybody know that no, because he never marched with Martin Luther King in the South. Straight up. Never.
So are we believing the story or are we not believing the story? That's all I want to know.
Never in Alabama. Never in Alabama, but continue the story.
Wait, but, okay, so are we believing the story or are we not believing the story? That's all I
need to know. I probably won't go down to the rabbit hole because, I'm a point of the iniquities in the story, in the falsehoods, you know. And, I understand, Jesse Jackson, like you said, you feel for him, and I'm feeling for him, too, where the story's going. You're breaking my heart. But continue to break my heart, Dan.
I'm breaking your heart.
Continue to break my heart. Go on ahead.
Okay, hold on one second. Let me go back to my doing, day.
What we're doing, Dan, is breaking down why he's a manic depressive. We might be able to solve the case right here. We might be able to get the man some therapy and might be able to understand why the man came after the Tillmans. But continue on.
Okay, here we go. Hold on.
What, should I go to commercial break without you catch your breath or you got your spot? What?
I got my spot. Okay. It says, as a child, Jackson was diagnosed as hyperactive and sent with his brother, Jonathan, to the LeMans Academy, a military junior high school in Rolling Prairie, Indiana.
Hold on. Let me get straight. He says, as a child, he was diagnosed hyperactive.
But see, that doesn't mean anything because a lot of kids are diagnosed as hyperactive, and it doesn't mean that.
We know you got bipolar 2 already, so it was diagnosed properly. Can you continue the story?
Well, but see, no, one does not mean the other. One does not necessarily mean the other. Okay, but so it says that he was in Rolling Prairie, Indiana. Okay. At St. Albans, the exclusive private high school for boys in Washington, D.C., he exhibited a rebellious streak, earning a reputation as a troublemaker. But he was also a star running back good enough to attract scholarships from such top football schools as Notre Dame. Instead, Jackson chose North Carolina A&T State University, his father's alma mater. He graduated magna cum laude, again, like his father. He went on to get a divinity degree at the Chicago Theological Seminary School and then added a law degree from the University of Illinois, too. Jackson never sought ordination or admittance to the bar. However, he felt the call, the pressure, maybe to go into public service and excel at it. I grew up in a house with great expectations, Jackson told the Chicago Tribune in 1995. If I want to be a lawyer, that's not enough. I need to be a Supreme Court justice one day. If I wanted to be an elected official, that's not enough. One day, son, you may be president. Jackson is the only one of his siblings to choose elective politics. His older sister, Santita, 49, an on-air pundit at Fox News Channel. What? Oh, sorry. Produces and co-hosts her father's nationally syndicated radio show.
It blew your mind, didn't it? Keep it going.
What?
Yeah, blew your mind. Keep it going.
Jonathan, 46, and Yusuf, 41, are partners in a lucrative Anheuser-Busch distributorship. Jonathan is also a director of the Rainbow Push Coalition. The youngest, Jacqueline, 37, stays out of the public eye. Uh-oh, I heard the bell. Does that mean I'm done?
Oh, you can move. You still on? You still
question?
Good? You know you're still good.
Jackson first pursued a congressional seat in...
Oh, hold on, hold on. Ebony got a correction. She let everybody know. What's that, Ebony?
Oh.
Jackson's birthday is on March 11th, and the 7th March is on March 25th. So, yeah, plenty of time. But that's anyone know. All right, that's
see?
Out there.
So, see? So,
right,
we'll
know
we're
going to be out for now, but keep it moving. keep it moving.
Okay, hold on. Okay, you ready? Hold on. Okay, so he first pursued a congressional seat in 1995 in a special election to fill the vacancy left by disgraced incumbent Mel Reynolds, who resigned 10 days after being convicted of multiple counts of sexual assault and child pornography involving a 16-year-old. Really? The field Jackson faced was formidable. It included Emil Jones, the majority leader of Illinois Senate, and state lawmakers Monique Davis and Alice Palmer. Palmer gave newcomer Barack Obama the green light to pursue her place in the Illinois General Assembly when she made her bid for a Reynolds seat. After losing the primary, she tried to reclaim her seat, but Obama refused to pull out of the race. Jackson won, but was livid when his father upstaged his election night victory party with a long speech that pushed the new congressman's own speech well past the 10 o'clock news. Tension between the two built still more, a confidant says, when the elder Jackson counseled Bill Clinton during the Monica Lewinsky scandal. As his son knew, and as would become public years later, the Operation Push founder was having an affair with a staffer whom he would father a child. Jackson feared that the affair would be exposed and that his family broken apart. At times, father and son spoke to each other through intermediaries, according to a source once close to the family. Despite those tensions, it didn't take long for Jackson to become a media darling, a full package, smart, charming, handsome. He was crowned by People as the sexiest politician in 1997. That same year, Newsweek listed him as one of the 100 people to watch in the new millennium. Early backers included Warren Beatty, Maya Angelou, and Bill Cosby. He got off to a fast start in Washington, too, becoming a fervent and dependable voice for progressive causes. He went years without missing a floor vote, and he scored much-needed federal dollars for a wide array of infrastructure projects for his Southside district, championing the idea that the long neglected South Side and its suburbs should look like the more prosperous North Side. He became obsessed with creating a third regional airport on the farmlands of South Suburban Piatone.
Now hold it right there. An exclusive goal so far, but dig it. It has never happened. Elusive goal so far, and that's out in the suburbs where there's hardly no African Americans again. But he left for Piatone and left his neighborhood plighted with his high crime and lack of jobs and high unemployment. And yes, the Piatone Airport is elusive. Didn't mean to cut you out there. Just want to put things out there for the people who are listening.
Okay, so maybe you can explain to people who don't live in Chicago and are not familiar with Piatone, why is that significant? What happened? What with the airport?
He feels that it might create jobs out there. Now, Piatone is far serious with Midway and O'Hare that it will create jobs and give everybody the third airport in the Kankakee area. But you know, everybody feels that Gary, Indiana airport can be the third airport because it's closer to city of Chicago than Midway. And stuff like that, but every year you hear about him saying the airport. Now, if you heard earlier in the Don Wave Own report, they asked him, do you own any land out there? Are you making money out there? Why Piatone? They asked him that question also, and he gave the answer. I tried to play a little bit earlier I mean, later on after the show when he said, bring it on. All right, continue on.
So why? So okay, so then, so you said he refused to answer?
I played the interview again. We have some time left in the show. And all the questions will be answered again. I tried to leave the show with answer these questions already, so we'll walk backwards. Go ahead on. We got about an hour to go, girl.
Okay. Okay, so, and as you said, Jimmy, it says it's an elusive goal so far, an elusive goal so far. Along the way, Jackson displayed a showman's sense of theater. A black belt in Taekwondo, he once challenged a Republican lawmaker to a fight on the House floor. But there was a real real passion there. When few, if any, elected officials in Chicago, including Obama, dared to criticize Mayor Richard M. Daley, Jackson spoke out about being the smog of corruption and cover-up in Daley's administration, emerging as a defiant voice of hope and change. In 2004, through Jackson's energy, though Jackson's energy was flagging, he later said in interviews that he felt generally unwell and out of shape. He blamed his weight gain from 195 pounds in his freshman term to as much as 312, according to a report in Jet magazine, on his penchant for drive-through tacos after long days on the hill. Diet and exercise, including martial arts, didn't seem to help. So he turned, as his sister Santita had earlier that year, to a type of weight loss surgery called a duodenal switch. The procedure, which involves removing about 80% of the patient's stomach, aims, among other things, to reduce the calories the body is able to absorb from food. Though duodenal switch surgery can result in easier weight loss than less complicated gastric bypass surgeries, it isn't performed as often, in part because it carries a higher risk of nutritional deficiencies. Jackson shed 50 pounds in 9 months, though at first he didn't tell many people how. Sources say Jackson had the operation in San Francisco, perhaps to avoid being recognized at a Chicago hospital. When the Sun-Times asked him about his leaner physique a few months after the surgery, Jackson answered that he was exercising and eating better and receiving shots in the butt to boost his metabolism. A week later, he recanted. Until now, I hadn't publicly discussed the surgery because my daily focus has been on the overall lifestyle changes that are necessary to improve my long-term health, he wrote in a letter to the paper. While he was seating his...
Hold on. The man just says he's taking shots of the butt. I'm just sorry. That's something an average man would just tell nobody to report him, but, you know, just report him. I'm taking shots of the butt. I'm just throwing it out there.
He said up the butt.
He gets shots in the butt. Such a nigga in the booty.
Stop saying like that. See, this guy's making close about stuff. We don't know whether we'll say it or not.
Okay, I'm just saying. I mean, shots at the butt. I just went to there, but I got shots at the butt. Go on ahead.
Now, wait a minute. If it was B12, that shot is given in the glute. So maybe.
Go on.
Huh?
Read on. Just read on.
So that could be what he means. I don't know. It just, you're right. It does sound weird when someone
right.
says a shot at the butt. But, okay, ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. While he was seeding his district with federally funded projects, Jackson was also building his own political mini-machine that disposed of hack after hack in the predominantly African-American ward in the city and the South Suburban Legislative Districts. He replaced the departees with supposedly reform-minded politicians who fit his mold, including the state representative, David Miller.
He's gone.
Robin Kelly. Huh?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm trying to check the checklist, Ebony. Go on ahead. Read on. Go on ahead.
Robin Kelly, now the chief administrative officer for Cook County, James Meek, the former state senator, whom Jackson helped as first as an independent.
That's
Larry
right,
Rogers, senior of the Cook County Board of Review, and the alderman, Pat Dowd.
Being investigated.
And Anthony Beal.
You see, Pat Dowell was one of the he came after us on, but we're going to do that later. But it's funny, I'm reading that David Miller, he's out. Robin Kelly can't be found. My listen having her. And Larry Rogers right now being investigated by the feds. I wonder if that means it's Pat Dowell. Oh, somebody in the office is supposed to get bribed, but we know. They say he's not mentioning it, but somebody in his office could bribe. And we know Jesse put him in there, but, you know. Jesse, a lot of people are disappearing. Like, nobody heard from the great Reverend James Meeks. He got him pushed in, state senator. Once Jesse Jackson got caught in that scandal, he stepped down, and nobody's heard anything from him since. Now, he's a reverend now. And you'd think that a reverend would come out and speak upon one of his friends that's in need, that major needs of Christ, even though he attends Meek's church and he is Meek's pastor. You'd think that your pastor would come out and speak upon you, but you know, it's a different story. But continue to read on.
Wait, now, so you're saying that he has not said anything?
No. See, everybody you named? Now, one of these people that have come out and speak on Jesse Jackson's behalf in this so-called crisis of dilemma. Now, you put all these people in. I mean, listen, they gave this cat's mail. Listen, when they say, see, this just funded projects, the man, they gave the man millions of dollars. He spent like $3 million to get us out. So he took $3 million in the little Alderman war. That's how much people pay that much for run for congressmen, what? Governors. The governor didn't spend that much money to run for governor. But you know, he spent a lot of money doing that. But keep reading on. I'm not going to deal with that yet. Because the man's sick. Go on, head on. Keep reading on.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, go on.
Okay, so Jackson's political organization, says Don Rose, the veteran political consultant, isn't like the old machines of yore, built on a huge army of workers rewarded with patronage jobs, but is more candidate-based, in which Jackson trades his technical know-how and campaign apparatus and strategies.
He was charging them money. See, basically, everybody you name had to pay Jesse Jackson a fee, and he would come in and campaign for you. That's all that was for him and Sandy got paid. But continue on. Go ahead on.
We
discuss it on the coming break.
Okay, all right, here we go. Okay, so
campaign apparatus
in its own way. Huh?
Right. You said campaign apparatus and strategies, which you last left off at.
Oh no, I got it right here. It says it was brilliant in its own way. Jackson endorsed reformers over previously immovable party regulars, regardless of race or party. It burnished a brand, and also built a coalition that he hoped would prove useful down the line.
Regardless of party, there was a war called the Second War, where it was. See, they didn't mention. They skipped out Ebony. Bob Ferretti, the white guy, he put in when he took. See,
he missed a lot of people.
Right, he missed a lot of people. You got to find names. Bob Ferretti, a lot of people.
The Dicks.
You got to find. You'll find this name anyway. Go ahead on.
Wait, no, what were you saying?
I lost my thought. Go ahead on. No, about Bob Ferretti. Yeah, Bob Ferretti was a Second War alderman. And but he is the first white alderman since the Second War was the first historically black alderman, the first black ward in the city of Chicago, when Chicago became a incorporated city. Now, from out of the Second War, all black politicians came out of there. That's when blacks got their political spot. And he came out and said, no matter what color, race you are, black and white, what have you, so he removed the black person, put some whitey white there, you know. And so he took the first, it's like going to Egypt and getting rid of the Sphinx. Because, you know, a lot of Bobby Rush came out of the Second War. A lot of the first black congressman of Illinois came out to Second War, a lot of black great politicians, Rob Mecca, a lot of people came out of the Second War political machine, though. So you replaced that historical movement and by putting somebody white in it. Now it would never have this historical presence that it had no more. It was the heart of Bronzeville back at that time. Now, you know, white man sits in Bronzeville now, but that's how it goes. He put somebody white in there. But that's what I mean by it was brilliant. Yeah, it was brilliant. Please show everybody that I'll give it to everybody black. I'm your man. See me, I take them down. Go ahead on. Plantation politics, he called it.
They call it what, the plantation pipe?
He called all the leaders of the black community that was speaking for black people and he's putting black issues front. He called them plantation politics workers, and we got to get down to white men in order to get black issues. That was his whole format. So you got to put everybody that would be more friendly to white people in. And that's why now blacks ain't getting no jobs, no contracting jobs now in Chicago, because all the black alderman that was sitting on and making sure all the black people got contracts, Jesse Jackson came and took them out. So now all the blacks ain't getting no more jobs no more. Now, you know, all the minority contracts are gone now because everybody's making sure the blacks get the minority contracts now removed. That's why the blacks are in the problem they're in right now because of Jesse Jackson. But continue the story.
Okay. So it says in 2005, he found himself being talked up for a mayoral run. In retrospect, it turned out to be the high point of his career, for by now, his prospects on Capitol Hill had stalled. Not hewing lockstep to the party line, kept him from rising into Democratic leadership, as did his distaste for party fundraising, which helped Rahm Emanuel gain influence. And while bipartisan at home, he was ideologically more liberal than his party's leadership in Washington. Jackson wasn't serious about running for mayor at first. He just liked having the platform that came with being a prospective candidate. But at some point, he was seduced into taking it seriously. In September 2006, he set up an exploratory committee to challenge Mayor Daley, for which he raised about $30,000, and embarked on a listening tour of all 50 wards. What spoke loudest, though, was the sound of checkpoints slamming shut. Daley had the town locked. Hold on. Okay. Sorry, my computer.
They had the town locked tight, right? They had the town locked tight? Daley said Daley had the town locked down tight, Jackson said, right? Where you at?
It said, it's virtually impossible for you to raise money in Chicago if you're challenging the mayor, Jackson told the Tribune in 2007. People spurn you. Of the 28 donors to his exploratory committee, 17 lived outside Illinois. When the Democrats won back the House in 2006, midterm, Jackson had a face saving out, and he quickly bailed on the mayor's race, now part of the majority. His line went, he could do more for Chicago from Washington than from City Hall. After gaining a seat on the Appropriations Committee, Jackson bragged in an interview, I'm Dan Rostenkowski. I'm Dan Rostenkowski, the all-powerful chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. It wasn't the first time Jackson displayed outsized ambition. During a 2005 interview for Profile in this magazine, he joked about being on Mount Rushmore. I want to be a founding father, he said. But mostly, Jackson's congressional career carried on as much as before. The man of ambition who wanted to change the world remained stuck worrying about the Dixie Square Mall. By many accounts, he grew increasingly frustrated, especially after another Southsider, Barack Obama, stormed the national political stage and leapfrogged Jackson on his way to the U.S. Senate. He's a guy who frankly expected a lot of himself, says one major Democratic fundraiser who was once close to Jackson. I can remember going back to 2005 after Barack had won the Senate seat and Jesse articulated his frustrations that he was in line first and Barack was passing him by. Obama's rise also stunned the elder Jackson, says a source once close to the family's inner circle. He thought it should have been Jesse Jr. At other times, though, Jackson expressed relief that the pressure of being the one has shifted to Obama. He dutifully served in the background as a national campaign co-chair for Obama and frequently appeared in the media as a forceful surrogate. No time more than after his father, in a comment, caught on TV microphones that he was turned that he thought was turned off, that he wanted to cut his nuts off for talking down to black people. Still, it had ranked.
Cut who nuts off? Cut who nuts off? Who was what? Cut off Obama nuts? So you mean to tell me that even Jesse Jackson knew, even Jesse Jackson senior knew back then that Obama would be talking down to black people? Okay, I'm not fucking.
Republican because, for one thing, he is. Hold on.
Hey, Dana, the article's not lying.
Hey, guys.
Just keep moving. The article ain't lying. Keep it moving.
Hold on 1 second, Jimmy. Hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second.
The article ain't lying. The article's not lying. Well, okay, here we go.
Wouldn't you just like to feel clean again? In Chicago and surrounding areas, Unique Towel Cleaning Service is the best cleaning service. We do basic cleaning and super cleaning, offices and apartment buildings. We will even clean your barber shop, your beauty shop, your spa or restaurant's towels and aprons. Call Unique Towel Cleaning Service at 773-484-5027. Ask us about our very special offer for our new clients. Call us at 773-484-5027 today and feel clean.
All right, ready, Dana?
I'm here. Okay, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so this guy is obviously a Republican, and he's just trying to put the bad news out there on the Democrats. That's all it is. That's all it is.
Okay, I go finish reading now. Get your PSA out.
Okay, so still, it had to rankle the man who had recently backed out of the Chicago mayoral race to watch Obama become the leader of the free world. That would be President Obama, sir, whoever wrote this article, Mr. Rhodes. Jackson's reputation as a former first took a hit when he helped elect his wife to the city council in 2007. It smacked of the kind of friends and family politics practiced more readily by his political foes, even if Sandy had already been immersed in national politics, including positions at the Democratic National Convention and senior posts at the Export-Import Bank. Oh, come on now. This dude is just trying to say anything he can against the Democrats. Hello?
It smacked of a kind of friends and family politics practiced more readily by his political foes. Even if Sandy, his wife, had already been immersed in national politics, including position at the Democratic National Committee, which she was, and the senior post in the Export-Import Bank, which she was, appointed by Bill Clinton, which she was, there ain't no Democratic spin, it's the truth. The couple met in D.C., that's true too, Dana, in 88 when Sandy worked as the press secretary for Texas Congressman Mickey Leland. That's true, Dana. Ain't no spin. That's the truth now. Let me go. She left to attend law school at the University of Illinois with her future husband. Afterwards, she set up a political consultancy in Chicago from which she helped build Jackson's organization. Her ascension really became a part of a plan that Jesse Jr. had to establish a political beachhead, said the former Jackson confidant, who requested an anonymity. And he very methodically went about plotting diligently and successfully. He had a war room with everybody's pictures on it. The article does not say that. That's it's an inside note. Jackson invested just over $87,000 from his congressional coffers to Sandy's campaign. True story, Dana. That was about the third of all the money raised to defeat Darcell Beavers, who ran the 7th. That was Darcell Beavers was a coming 7th Ward alderman. Herself, she was appointed by her father, Commissioner Beavers, right now, who right now has been investigated. You know, Jackson got him under investigation anyway. Bill Beavers was his name. Jackson has since contributed another $164,000 to his wife's campaign fund. Even as Alderman Sandy continued to draw a paycheck, which is true, Dana, from her husband's campaign fund. This is why it's been investigated, not everybody. Now, this is the truth. Everybody knows about it, but this is why they're really messing with him. Okay, even as Alderman Sandy continues to draw a paycheck from her husband's campaign fund, she has made at least $275,000 since she took the seat in 2007. Nearly $450,000 since 2002. The couple received a ruling from the Federal Election Committee saying the practice was legal, but that didn't mean it smelled fishy. Critics accused Jackson of converting campaign contributions to personal income. It didn't seem to bother him. Now, what he's been investigated right now is taking funds out of his personal account and buying some furniture with his house. See, it's not like they did not know he was doing stuff like that before. It was just that they was waiting on to catch him on buying something shady, probably like a coffee table. The best way to describe both of them, said the former associate, is that they're very out of touch with reality, living in their own fantasy world. The D.C. Office of Tax and Revenue values a Washington home off Ritchie DuPont Circle at $1.3 million. And Jackson has a well-documented taste of BMWs. One of the first things Sandy did upon taking office was grossly publicly announce that her automatic expenses allowance of $33,280 a year was too much, was too low. She probably had a fundraiser and took up $50,000 to get her office up to speed, because at the time she said that's too little to be an alderman. We need more money. That was funny when I hit the papers. Everybody was laughing at her, but, you know, I'm going to bring that up too one day. The Jackson marriage seemed picture perfect, though it was unconventional even by political marriage standards. The office spent time apart in Washington. She in Chicago with little overlap. Sandy's mother frequently looked after the children. But Jackson's affair with the mistress revealed by Sun Times in September, 2 years after the relationship had supposedly ended, exposed the deep fractures in their relationship. With the marital problems front page news, Sandy went on damage control, going public to discuss her private anguish. Her husband was not made available for questions. While Sandy said in an interview I put my foot knee deep in Jesse's ass because I wanted everyone to know I was not taking it lightly. Sosa said it wasn't the first time her husband had strayed. It was not because Jackson's not happy with Sandy. They have a great relationship. One source who used to be close to Jackson explains, it's to feed his insecurities. Guys who are insecure need to have that validation. Jackson needed validation in his political life, too. And despite his mixed feelings about Obama's rise to the White House in 2008, it opened up new opportunities for his career. Somebody had to fill Obama's Senate seat, and Jackson figured it should be him. He was re-energized, one source says. I sense that Jackson reached for the Senate seat out of being awkward. Jackson would have been a logical pick. He had been congressman for 13 years with a near whiff of scandal. News of extramarital affairs had not yet broken. He was a gifted orator. He was friends with Obama, who often hailed from the South Side. He would retain the only African-American seat in the Senate, but Jackson presumably knew Governor Blagojevich was not planning to appoint someone on merit or even qualifications. The governor was trying to leverage his appointment for powerful political and personal gains. Worse for Jackson, Blagojevich has harbored deep loathing feelings for him, apparently because Jackson recanted his endorsement of Blagojevich in 2002 governor race after Roland Burris entered the contest. Ironically, the governor, as well as everybody else, ended up appointing Roland Burris to replace him. That's funny. I get the appointment now, Ebony. He's like, man, you didn't back me, so I put Roland Burris in the seat. That's funny. That's really funny, looking in and behind the stage. How much time I got left, Ebony? Usually when it comes to seeking political appointment, good politicians follow the template set down by successful vice presidential wannabes. Don't let on how badly you want the job, but let on just how enough to make it clear that if asked, you'll take it. Instead, Jackson built a public case to pressure the governor into choosing him. He chatted up as many reporters as he could, spoke to editorial boards, encouraged letter-writing campaigns, and commissioned his wife to conduct two polls. One indicated that Jackson led a prospective Senate candidate with support of 21% of those surveyed. The other showed that Sandy would be overwhelmingly favored to see husband in the House. The recent, let's check that out, she polled him and her at the same time. To the rest of the political establishment, Jackson's aggressiveness was unsenatorial, even seemly. That period of time, it was problematic, recalls Kwame Roe, the state senator who holds Obama's old Senate seat in the General Assembly. There was a number of people who had interest in the seat, number of congressmen and others, but he was the most visible. Jackson was unapologetic. Anyone who is not campaigning for the office in one form or another is not taking the process seriously, as it has to be taken, he said in a TV interview. In the 2008 Democratic Convention in Denver, Jackson's quest for the seat became a piece of pure theater, raising to speak in a room filled with Illinois' most powerful political fears. Jackson put away his prepared remarks, teared up, and called for a grand reconciliation, which saw him hugging Congressman rivals Bobby Rush, who he couldn't stand, not his friends, not funny, Debbie Harrison, who ran against him, and Mayor Daley. It seems bizarre, genuinely, at the time, but it looked back, one could wonder if that hug-a-thon was a stunt to consolidate support for the Senate bid. He really, really, really in his heart believed he was going to be U.S. Senate, says Harrison. He had to make peace with everyone he pissed off. Denver's also where Jackson first spoke to NIAC about wanting to appointment. According to the testimony Jackson gave to the House Ethics Committee, he later downplayed the conversation, saying mainly the NIAC was calling him senator. The Indian-born businessman first entered Jackson's family orbit as a supporter of Operation Push. He befriended Jackson's brother Jonathan, and they partnered in several business deals, including the development of Southside Bank building. So he developed Southside Bank building. Check that out. I know that. It's unclear how close NIAC and Jackson are, but it's no question that NIAC and other business associated. Bendy, one of the state chief's trade officers, offered $1.5 million, perhaps upwards of $6 million on Jackson's behalf to Rob Blagojevich, who handled the fundraising for his brother. The question of ethics found probable cause to believe Jackson had either directed NIAC to make a pay-for-play offer to Blagojevich or his plan. Blagojevich was captured on federal wiretaps, frequently telling his adversaries that the idea of appointing Jackson was repugnant to him, but his options seemed to dwindle. Jackson became more centered to his thinking. I can't believe something he said, Blagojevich commented on the wiretap, but what he's got third party saying to me is a heck of a lot of more substantial than what we're going to get from Obama. People, okay. Now, that's when he talked about the Senate seat. Now, the article goes on. There's two more sections of the article, but I got, what, about 20 minutes left in the article. And so I'll have to bring that up on a later conversation date. So I got you in the day. Now, Dan, I want you to read the rest of that article. Now, what I'm going to do is now, I'm going to play a little part of the I'm going to let you read the article later, Dana. I'm going to play a little part of Jesse Jackson. Right. She's so biased on the Democrats. Do dirty. Jesse Jackson.
Roma on Governor Quinn's desk is a guaranteed program backed by private
sector dollars.
But he's a pretty cutthroat guy. I mean, everybody knows Rom. He is a political competitor.
Well, let me be clear. Rom, as I shared with an A-game, because that's exactly what the
naming Jackson to the U.S. Senate. This is the prosecutor's position. This is the first time authorities publicly suggested that Jackson was aware of the efforts by his allies to swap campaign cash for his appointment to the Senate seat. So the question is, were you sitting down with some important Indian businessman in a Loop restaurant on October 28th with a discussion over money for you to get that Senate seat?
Well, let me be clear about this. Number one, my name has obviously come up in the case, and so has Rahm Emanuel's. I'm not on any tapes, but he is. But neither one of us has been accused of any wrongdoing. In addition to that, I'm not alone in the meeting. You know, it baffled me that, you know, Jackson sits with the Indians. How about this? Congressman meets with Director of Economic Development and Trade for the state of Illinois, who one of the gentlemen happened to be, met with him for 30 minutes in the presence of other people and discussed the third airport when another gentleman showed up and began having a conversation practically in Hindu, because I don't speak Hindu or Swarmi, and I did not participate in any of that part of the conversation, nor do I even remember hearing it, and I have witnesses present. So I know that's probably not enough for some people, but I've kind of endured this for about 20 months, just kind of watching it banter about. But show me the evidence that says I instructed anybody to do anything. And let me say it again, because I'm saying it to you on your show. And I have witnesses. So whatever happened to the idea that someone is innocent in America until proven guilty? I have gone through 20 months of unprecedented accusations, unprecedented besmirching of my character. And I can live with the consequences of that. I mean, I love Chicago, but I can assure you this. Let me say this on your show, Don and Roma, because you guys have always been kind to me. I'm going to do nothing in the municipal elections, should I choose to engage them or not, that tear at the fiber of the city. If my presence in the campaign, or even my presence in this present process of trying to provide some leadership on these questions, is so detrimental, if my service for 15 years has been so bad to the city of Chicago, that it's not worth me engaging in an effort that talks about the city's future. That's where I am.
I think probably your quietude over the past month has contributed to that.
Well, you know,
your decision not to get out into the fray and to let it just all play out.
But you know, Roman, it's a legal process, and I have to respect that legal process. This is Mr. Fitzgerald's process. It's not my process. And so, with all due respect, when I received a subpoena, as Rahm Emanuel did and Valerie Jarrett did, you know, what we say can and will be held against us in a court of law. And so the prosecution didn't call me. The defense didn't call me.
Right.
Because the prosecution, I assume, has concluded that what I have to say doesn't contribute to their case. And I assume that they have no evidence, or they should have brought a charge. If I'm a conspirator, bring it on. But I can't possibly be a conspiracy to that which I'm not a part of or don't know, have no knowledge of.
Right.
So you are at ease.
Now, I'm going to stop right there now. So they said bring it on. You got people coming out the woodworks. His wife came out, the mistress came out. Bring it on. The feds now got him spending money on housing stuff. I mean, like I said, in the article, it talks about how the federal government already investigated his funds because they look at him and his wife misappropriating funds, but now they got him on misappropriating funds by taking campaign money and buying stuff for his house. It's just a matter of time, Dana. This ain't no Democrat witch hunt. This is how it happens. He wasn't brought on, he got brought on.
Well, it's a witch hunt because why wouldn't they use the same
2008, Dana. It's 2012. The Robert Gordon went down in 2008. They've let the man slide. He's been sliding since 2008. Everybody's still linking up to Robert Gordon. It's been 4 years. This ain't a witch hunt. If it was a witch hunt, he'd have been locked up by now.
Yes,
but right
but
now,
it's
right
obviously
now,
he has, a witch hunt.
Right now, but Dana. Okay, Dana. If you can recall, he came out and said, "Where's Jesse Jackson?" "Oh, well, he's suffering. He's taking a vacation. He's stressed out." "Okay. Where's Jesse Jackson?" "Oh, he had a complication from his guy his surgery." "Where's Jesse Jackson?" "Okay, he's got bipolar. He's just been diagnosed."
article already told you he'd been diagnosed way back when he was a little child, which everybody knew that. I mean, everything he said has been a lie, Dana. He's been lying. He's been lying straight up.
Yeah, but my thing is that if they really have something on him, if they really have something, then why would you be trying to say he decorated his house? That would be like the least likely thing that this man would do with some campaign funds. That's like coming
okay,
out and saying,
Dana,
you took
Dana,
money and you went
in Chicago every day. Listen, politicians in Chicago every day go to jail for just like that. Somebody painted on my house.
Right.
I went to my back porch.
No, Dana.
There's a lot of politicians right now in jail for having somebody come working on their house, painting on their house, fixing their car tires. And that's straight up. And that's petty. But, Dana, let me ask this question. You've been to follow my show for the last, 20-some-odd years I've been on air. Listen, what is my position? What do I think Jesse Jackson's at? What do I think he's at? Right, now he's in witness protection, right?
Right, that's what you think.
Right. So now I'll give you this. The best way to keep your snitch in witness protection agency is to lock his ass up. On what? The most minutest jaywalking, spitting in the wind. Car violation, child support checkup. Point I'm saying is, we need to sit you in for a second. And now while we got you in, we're about to bring everybody in, lock them up, then you can come back out. But let me tell you something. I told you, he can't come home. He can't come home. Now everybody's saying D.C. is his home. They try to make you think D.C. is his home. His kids in D.C., his kids are going to Chicago. His wife in D.C., but his wife is all in Chicago. What the hell? He can't.
Yeah. See, you
say
ain't trying to go home either.
Dana, he can't come home. And listen, put it like this, Dana. They let him out, and next thing you know, they found pictures of him at clubs and nightclubs, and somebody said they saw him on the step. And then what the feds do? They bring his ass back in. He's back in the Mayo Clinic because, like, man, you got shot. He got to bring you back in, dude. You got bipolar again. He had a relapse. You should have been outside. You get caught on camera. You get caught on video. Come on back in, homie. Come on back in. Because you named some names in that article. Larry Rogers Jr. right now, there's some people in this organization right now who's going to jail for a $2,000 bribe. And here's the funny part about it, Dana. They did some work for somebody. The man was happy to get his taxes going to him. The man offered the money. He said, no, I don't want it. They offered the money twice. No. I don't want it. All the money three times. No. Took him out to dinner, man. All right, man, fuck it. He took it. So he took it, got arrested. Now, the person, somebody, rumor has it. And I ain't got it from a confirmed source. Rumor has it that somebody sent that guy to Larry Rogers because he knew they was going to get a hookup. And Larry Rogers took that guy in because he knew the guy sent him there. And guess who that guy was? The guy's crazy now. He's locked up some hotel now in a clinic. The point I'm saying is, everybody in Chicago, all of them right now got caught up in a crack house in the city right now. I ain't got a crack house in Maywood, Illinois. His blame is that, hey, I'm not responsible for the people who got the whatever. But the point I'm saying is, everybody's dirt is coming out. Because everybody talked to one group of people in the city. They talked to the Jackson. Every problem, every movement, every thought, every political thing, they go to the Jacksons. He came out there, and I'm telling you again, he admitted to wearing a wire. This is his words. This is not my words. This is his words. Now, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm going to continue that article on because I'll have part two Monday of Jesse Jackson Jr. on Blast. As a matter of fact, I might dedicate the rest of my show Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to, yo, Jesse, bring your ass home. Because
Not if they're doing it Al Capone style. Don't do it.
Be a man. Don't worry. If those tapes come out to you with those little boys, don't worry about it, man. Don't worry about it. Be a man, Jesse. Come on out. Out of hiding. Come on out, homie. Come on out. And matter of fact, where's Reverend Meeks now? Where's your pastor at? Where's Anthony Bill at?
Where Pat Dowell at? Where Larry Rogers at? Where Ferretti at? Where everybody that paid, well, I guess paid for play, huh? Was everybody that you stood behind? Why they're not standing with you now? Mixes is Reverend Ebony.
He didn't
come
to see him while he's sick.
Wow, and I'm on the air. Yeah. And yeah, Mix didn't come to see him while he's sick, sis. Ain't that about something? And Mix, and hey, how about this, Ebony? Danny, the people of the world. He got Mix elected. Tried to get Mix to run for governor. And was pushing Mix to run for mayor. Mix couldn't even hold his own on a debate on WVON. And then he disappears off the set, never to be heard from again. And he has his mega church. And right now, he should be offering prayers for his member of his church. He should come out right now and tell everybody to have prayers for Jesse, but why is he quiet? See, the old folks said back in the day, silence is deafening. You know what I'm saying? Silence is deafening. But that's how it is, man. When you're all shaky, you know. Matter of fact, you know it's a good time for me. You know it's a good time. We know someone got to lead in now, don't you? So you know that it's a good time for that song, Ebony. One, you know, you got to play it. You got to play the Kanye. You got to play that Kanye. You got to play Chi-Town's Finest. You got to play Kanye West. You got to play that Kanye West, not the Godflow, Ebony. You got to play Kanye West, the killer cut. Yes, Ebony, you got to play the killer cut. The cut is killing everybody in Chicago. The killer cut that everybody's dying over. Chief Keef. Lil Wayne.
Broad niggas, y'all niggas, that's that shit I don't like. Yo shit, make believe, rapping about my own life. Woo! That's Rand, nigga. Woo! Ric Flair, nigga. Woo! The power's in my hair, nigga. Woo! I get this piece of chair, nigga. Soho, a Tribeca, three hoes, Trifecta, dope money, coke money, shoe blow, my watch better, my pen's better, you don't write, trendsetter, you clone like, pay homage or K's vomit, ungrateful niggas I don't like. Rah!
A fuck nigga, that's that shit I don't like.
Bang, bang.
A snitch nigga, that's that shit I don't like.
Bang, bang.
A bitch nigga, that's that shit I don't like.
Bang, bang. Smile in my face is what I don't like. They see a whole sound, that's a sound bite. The media crucify me like they did Christ. They wanna find me not breathing like they found Mike. A girl will run her mouth only out of spite. But I never hit a woman, never in my life. I was in too deep like Makai Fife. And that pussy so deep I could've drowned twice. Rose gold, Jesus peace with the brown ice. Eating good vegetarian with the brown rice. Girls kissing girls, cause it's hot, right? But unless they use a strap on, then they not dykes. They ain't about that life, they ain't about that life. We hanging out the window, it's about to be a Suge night. Free Bump J, real nigga for life. Shout out to Dick Rose, man that nigga nice. Shout out to L.E.P., J Boogie, right? Chief King Louie, this is Shy, right? Right?
A fuck nigga, that's that shit I don't like. A snitch nigga, that's that shit I don't like. A bitch nigga, that's that shit I don't like. Sneak, that's all that shit I don't like. Don't like, don't like. A snitch nigga, that's that shit I don't like.
Don't stop on the
beat. Gucci, that's that shit I don't like. Smoking on the dope, high as the vice.
my little snitch song for the little snitch guy, you know, but that's just how it is. Mr. Smarty Pants himself, JJJ. But anyway, Dan, I'm going to get off that for a second because we got New Music Thursday coming up tomorrow. And on New Music Thursday, we got some new Ape Yard, some new Jason Chess, some new PCP, and some new JP. And some other new cuts we're trying to dump load, and we're not going to have our top 10 list until we get all this stuff cleared up, and this Magic Jack comes this way, but that's neither here nor there. But anyway, Dana, before you start saying Jesse Jackson didn't do it, we know he did do it. We know he did do it. Everybody in Chicago know he did do it. Is there anything I can say to my audience before I let you go?
You know what? I got to tell you, as always, Jimmy, you have enlightened me. I'm holding out hope, but it's looking kind of dim.
Read the rest of the article. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it Monday. Read the rest of the article, and we're going to talk about it Monday.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Good night, Ebony. Good night, Jimmy. And I can't wait to see you tomorrow, huh?
I like the ending. I did not expect that ending. We're cool. We're going to keep it like that. Good. I can end my funky. We can keep it ending like that. Good. I can end it with my funky flow now because I thought you were going to go on your peace and love stuff. That's okay. I ended
it
with the peace and love.
I'm going to keep praying for our country, and I'm going to keep praying for
All right, Dana. Okay, Dana, I do.
You know it, Dana.
Okay, peace and love. That's what Dana said. But listen, good night, and may your God be with you. I was talking to a man in the Ben's shop today. He was tripping on me because I have a Masonic jacket on. Man, don't buy that stuff off the internet, y'all. Real talk. But anyway, like I told my man, always keep the Most High in your heart. Because ain't nobody that can make you denounce the Most High. But anyway, here you go, Jesse Jackson. This is for you. This is for you, homie.